Was George Washington a Christian, and does it matter? We're going to talk right now on Vocal Point with Dr. Peter Lilback, president of Westminster Theological Seminary, and he and I had the privilege of writing a book together called George Washington's Sacred Fire, which actually became a national bestseller. But tell us, was George Washington a Christian, and why does it matter?
Well, Jerry, first of all, we did make it number one on the Amazon list as the bestseller for a week. We were number one in the nation, and that was pretty exciting. It didn't stay up there for all that long, but for that one week, it was a thrill. But the basic question, was George Washington a Christian? I would argue if you let a man answer that question, that should be pretty decisive, because what other people say about you or don't say about you may or may not be accurate, but you would think that when it comes to the matter of the heart, one's own words would be decisive. And George Washington, first of all, never declares himself to be a deist. And there's not one instance of that. And yet on numerous instances throughout his writings, throughout his life, both by word and by action, and by direct implication, as well as by eyewitness account, he says, I am a Christian. And so if we're going to say he is the man who says honesty is the best policy, that's a direct quote out of Washington, then he should have been honest about one of the most important questions in a person's life, is he a Christian or not? George Washington early on wrote something like this, what I have written to you is true on the faith of a Christian. What did he mean by that? He said, I have faith as a Christian, what I've just written. I know God is going to hold me accountable someday because I'm going to stand before Jesus Christ as the great judge. And what I've written to you is true because of my Christian faith. So that's an example, probably the earliest direct example of him calling himself a Christian.
Didn't his adopted daughter, Nellie, say when one time she heard that somebody had questioned George Washington's Christianity, she said, you might as well question George Washington's patriotism as question his, Christian commitment.
Yes, that letter included in our book was first derived from the research of Jared Sparks, one of the early biographers of Washington. And he wrote the letter. He said, there has been a debate that's begun to surface as to whether your illustrious grandfather, remember Nellie Custis was his adopted granddaughter, therefore daughter, and asked her, was he a Christian? Now, this is very powerful because this person is someone who lived in his home, who saw him every day, who was with him all the way through his life when she entered into his sphere as his very own child. And she said on not only those striking words about you may as well doubt his patriotism as to doubt his Christianity. And everyone knows there's no greater patriot than George Washington. He risked everything. He's a very wealthy man to defend American liberty. But she goes on to describe the Christian practices that she observed in his life. And so that testimony is powerful because the one person you probably can't fool about your Christianity is a child living in your house, because they see you at your best and your worst. They see your actions. They know whether you're really serious about your faith. She said, he is as much a Christian as a patriot. Some of the things that we do derive also from her brother, who was George Washington Parke Custis Washington. Isn't that interesting? He was named George Washington, and then he was adopted by Washington, so he has not only Custis, but Washington in his name twice. And he got the nickname of Tub because of Washington. You know, there was Wash Tub, so that was the endearing term. But he's the man who ultimately gave us the great farm that's known as Arlington. Arlington National Cemetery was George Washington's adopted son's farm that was given to America. Now that's used for our great heroes. But in his writing, he describes some of the practices of the Christian Washington, and they mentioned that they used to read a chapter of scripture as a family before they would go to church in the morning, that on Sunday afternoons they would, Mrs. Washington and George Washington would get together and read a published sermon. Washington, believe it or not, was a sermon collector. He had a whole series of sermons filled with gospel messages and other great events like funeral orations or special sermons given in key locations. He collected them and bound them. So he not only knew the Bible, as we mentioned in an earlier discussion, he read the Bible to his family. He went to church after reading the Bible, and then on Sunday afternoons, he would, in fact, read sermons. In fact, he was a very serious Sunday Sabbath keeper when it came to business activities. He was not opposed. He was not a strict Puritan. He would travel on Sunday. He would go someplace to get ready to fox hunt the next day on Sunday. But when he was doing business, he made it a point, especially as the president, to do no government business on the Lord's Day. In fact, there was what was called the Speaker's Bill, that the only person he would entertain on Sunday at his home that was not a family guest would be the Speaker of the House, and he would ring the bell right at 5 in the afternoon, as I recall, and by ringing that bell, he would be let in, and that would be to prepare for the next day's business. But he would see no one else the rest of the day. So he took the constitutional language very seriously, Sunday accepted. He let Sunday be a day off and kept it as a day for him, his family, and for worship purposes. So there's wonderful evidence of Washington being a Christian. But probably the most remarkable example of his Christian testimony comes out in his service at Valley Forge. He makes the statement, while you're adding to your honor the great privilege of being patriot, add the highest honor of being a Christian. Mm. He calls on his men in another order to be Christian soldiers. He actually is witnessed in his Christian duties by a missionary, Henry Melchior Muhlenberg. He was actually the Lutheran missionary to the colonies in North America. His son, Peter Muhlenberg, had become one of the officers that was presiding with Washington at Valley Forge. And in the elder Muhlenberg's diary, he says, "Today I heard the report of Washington coming to the camp and calling on his men to stop swearing and misusing the name of God." And he says, "This man is not a man of the world, but is one who loves his Redeemer and follows his teaching." Now, that's quite a testimony for a missionary to describe a general in an army. In fact, Washington, as the general, made sure that Christian sermons were published and communicated to his soldiers. He made sure there were chaplains. When money was scarce, he demanded of the Congress that they would have chaplains for their soldiers. And he even made sure that a prayer by one of the chaplains was published. And you might call it the Prayer for the Soldiers. It was the Book of Common Prayer for Military Men by one of his favorite chaplains. So the testimony of his Christian actions, his Christian life, is seen all throughout his writings and his conduct. In fact, even when he was done with the war, he communicated with Lady Huntington. She was the one who helped fund the great evangelist George Whitefield. And she calls him a Christian in his writings, and he receives her statements and shares with her his common concern that the Native Americans, he called them the Aboriginals, would be evangelized with the good news of Christ.
Wow.
In fact, in one case, he actually talks to a group of Indian chiefs and says, "Above all the things you want to learn about the American way, above all, learn the religion of Jesus Christ, for this will make you a greater and happier people than you are." So Washington even helped evangelize the Indians. Now, a deist wouldn't do that. A deist wouldn't work with an evangelist missionary later like Lady Huntington to carry out the Great Commission. Those are some of the testimonies and examples of Washington's Christian faith.
Hmm. All right, let me ask you a question. Why does it matter? Why, you know, in other words, you look at the evidence, and honestly, the evidence is plain and is there. George Washington was an 18th century Anglican, and he believed, therefore, that Jesus was divine. He believed that Jesus died for sinners, that he rose from the dead, that he'll come back. You know, all those important things. But why does it matter what George Washington believed?
There's two reasons. One is personal and one is national. On a personal level, just sheer justice means that you shouldn't allow someone's reputation to be besmirched or rewritten or damaged for any reason. Person's career and their life and the things they cherish ought to be someone or something that we would also cherish because we respect them. So, Jerry, if I tried to rewrite your history, if I had the privilege or the uncertain honor to write your biography and say, well, actually, Jerry was a closet atheist and he didn't believe a thing he ever said on radio and writing. You know, that would be a tragedy because Jerry Newcomb is a Christian man through and through. So in much the same way, on the personal level, justice demands that we protect the reputation of Washington.
Okay, before you go to the national level, if I could just interject something here real quickly. I knew a man, Dean Jones, the Disney star from the 60s and other movies in the 70s and so forth. He became a Christian in the mid-70s or early 80s and caused him, as a Christian, to turn down many roles because it would have the character sleeping with somebody that wasn't his wife or whatever, you know, promote immoral values. And this cost him a lot, but he was faithful to Christ through it all. Well, he died about a year ago, and the New York Times left out of their obituary Dean Jones' Christian commitment. Now, thankfully, the Washington Post included it, but it was like that defined who he was for the last 20, 30 years. And in fact, we at D. James Kennedy Ministries used Dean Jones in a few programs, and it was great. He did a wonderful job.
That's called distorting history by selectivity or ellipsis. It's taking out a key element of someone's life. That's why when you see quotes from history and there's that dot, 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 sometimes it doesn't matter, but sometimes it changes the very character of what's being communicated. Good and point. Dean Jones or George Washington have been savaged by, not by direct attack, but by just subtraction.
So a sin of omission, if you will, the sin of omission.
That's exactly right.
All right, now why does it matter on the national level that George Washington was a Christian?
Well, obviously, we know the point that where you start is going to determine where you end. If I want to get someplace that's far away, and I'm starting in a particular place, I've got to figure out how to get to where I am to the where I'm going. The location and destination are important. They're interrelated. So if I want to get from here to Indonesia, like I'm going to be flying in a week, I've got to figure out, well, where do I stop in the middle? Because I've got to refuel. I've got to get, you know, we can't fly there. It's too far from Philadelphia. So the bottom line is, if Washington is connected with deism or secularism, it's an impossible flight to get there from Christianity to secularism. It's too far in 200 years to say we start as a Christian nation. But if you say Washington was a deist, that God was absent, unimportant, insignificant to him, except for causation, well, then it's an easy hop, skip, and jump to go from deism to basically a secular atheist nation. Mm. But if you start with Washington saying, I hold the biblical values, I hold to Christianity, I want Christian graces to be part of our constitutional fabric, part of our nation, then you can't just simply get to atheism. You have to explain, how did Washington's faith impact the public square, which he himself created? It basically argues this way, that Christians are not interlopers when it comes to the public square.
Right.
We actually created it. We belong here. We're not forcing our way in. Because today the argument is, you Christians stay away. You're trying to evangelize. You're trying to shape everything. You don't belong here. No, the argument is, Washington and our founding fathers created the public square, and their Christian faith was vital and essential to who they were and to the experiment they were doing. Washington called that experiment the sacred fire of liberty, and that was sacred, holy. It was coming from God. That means that the
presence have 10 seconds left.
Is part of it.
Yeah, okay.
God we trust helps to create the national square that we know today.
That is so good. So well done. Dr. Peter Loback, providenceforum.org for more information.